Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Short History of Queer Women by Kirsty Lohr. Narrated by Ellie Gossage. Someone, I say, will remember us. It is said that the poet Sappho invented the lesbian sometime between circa 620 and 570 BCE. Men had been screwing each other for a while by then. We know this to be true because it had been written about by men, sung about by men, and encouraged by women repulsed by men. Since then, historians have pretended that Sappho was just fond of her students in a totally non-sexual way. Sure, she may have written over 10,000 lines of dazzling verse about same-sex attraction, but that doesn't prove anything, does it? So the lesbian disappeared and didn't reemerge until Ellen DeGeneres said, "Yep, I'm gay," on the cover of Time magazine in 1997. Ellen explained that there were more of her kind and that they looked just like everybody else. But because she was a comedian, the Western world thought she was joking. As it became clear this wasn't a joke, they killed her. Career. That is the history of lesbianism. The end. Of course it isn't. These are just a couple of examples in a vast fish stew. And are we really supposed to believe that women weren't fooling around with one another before Sappho got her fingers wet? Female same-sex desire has been written out of history since, well, forever. If queer women did exist, it was because A, men found them attractive, which benefited the patriarchy in some way. B, My theory goes as follows. Before Sappho, before literacy, life was quite simple. Back then, a long time ago, a really long time ago, between 40,000 and 14,000 years ago, everybody was shagging everybody. All holes were goals, and days were spent drawing pictures in caves. The concept of fidelity, identity, sexuality, and gender were non-existent. And best of all, nobody gave a toss. Sometime later, let's say around 9,000 BCE, things changed. Days were spent constructing homes, farming, and foraging stable relationships. There were men, there were women, there were penises, and there were vaginas. But still, nobody minded who went with who and what went with what. They were quite happy to just get on with it. Men and women were equal. It was a solid 26 degrees Celsius from June through September, and nobody had to unstack the dishwasher. One day, around 3200 BCE, someone, probably a woman, invented a writing system that evolved into several different languages all over the world. Not long after that, a man used this literary development to write a letter to a male friend. In that letter, he joked that women were bad writers, especially when compared to men. It probably went something like this. Knock, knock. Who's there? A female writer. Yeah, right. Both men laugh uncontrollably. It was the first joke ever told at women's expense, and everybody thought it was hilarious. The joke was retold so many times that people began mistaking fiction for fact. Realizing the power of the written word, this man started making more jokes about women being stupid and physically incapable of doing important things, like hunting for food, building houses, providing for their family, opening jam jars, playing football, drinking pints of lager, and driving. Some of this might have happened a bit later, but you get it. A couple of years later, the same man happened to walk in on one of his lady lovers having sex with another woman. Because everybody was sleeping together, he didn't care. But as he was about to leave, something caught his eye. He'd never before seen a woman make those facial expressions or heard those noises. The man quickly penned another letter to his man friend, telling him that women sleeping with one another was dangerous and that they should be stopped. He added that maybe men should stop sleeping with each other too, but they could work that bit out later. The letter probably looked something like this. Ides of May, 3150 BCE. Dear Rylan, how are you doing? Just a thought, do you think that women should stop having sex with each other? It doesn't include us, and I'm worried they might like it better. Maybe we should stop having sex too, but only if you want to. Say hi to your mom. Kev, X. The letter went viral, and attitudes towards women doing it with one another instantly changed because it threatened a newly formed social system, the patriarchy. For instance, in ancient China, women were only allowed to take part in tuxi, eating each other, or mozingxi, rubbing mirrors, if they showed the same affection to their husband, who now owned them. That escalated quickly. But there was Jinglonghui, the Golden Orchid Society, 1644 to 1949 CE, a place where women could go to avoid marrying men. Because the women were mostly, and obviously, all lesbians, the relationships were sexual. And when one of them wanted to marry another one, they would ask by offering them a nut, followed by, "Hi, can I cash you a question?" "Okay, it was a peanut, but I take what I can." The wedding would be followed by a massive female-only party. The newly married couple could even adopt a daughter if they liked. For a while, everybody thought it was rather nice. But then the patriarchy caught wind of this dreamlike utopia and swiftly banned it. In Baghdad, the Abbasid Caliph al-Hadi, 764 to 786 CE, had heard rumors that two women in his harem were getting it on without him. Furious, he sent two spies to catch them in the act, which they did. To make a point, al-Hadi had them beheaded. To make an even bigger point, he decorated their heads and presented them to the court as a warning. Finally, in Central Africa, during the first half of the 18th century, the Zondi men were worried. Apparently, their wives were so desperate for sex that they'd started screwing each other when their husbands were off doing important things. One man said, "Wives would cut a sweet potato or manioc root in the shape of the male organ, or use a banana for the purpose. Two of them would shut themselves in a hut, and one would lie on the bed and play the female role, while the other, with the artificial organ tied around her stomach, played the male role. They then reversed roles." So that's where that came from. The Zondi men admitted that once a woman had been with another woman, it was difficult for them to stop doing it, especially because they weren't able to get the same amount of pleasure from their husbands. Sounds about right? Female same-sex desire was eventually deemed abnormal, immoral, perplexing, and, worst of all, gross. It soon became easier to pretend it never existed, and inventing history became another beloved pastime of the patriarchy. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go back to 630 BCE. Men were in charge, and women were feeble little creatures who could only manage minor tasks like getting through day two of their period without killing anyone and pushing small humans out of their vaginas. Over in Athens, women were regarded as irrational idiots, desperate to get laid. When they weren't trying to get laid, they were being hysterical on account of having a uterus, which is just basic science, so no complaints here. Women were not allowed to leave the house and usually had to stay in a room near the enslaved people's quarters. Thankfully, things were a bit more relaxed on Lesbos, a small Greek island located in the Aegean Sea. While women were still treated like absolute dog shit, they could at least leave their houses, and if they were really lucky, they could write. Sappho and the Birth of the Lesbian. One such woman was Sappho, a singer-songwriter who wrote about 10,000 lines of verse. Beat that, Allen Ginsberg. Sappho enjoyed writing about erotic love, an erotic love she felt for her own sex. She recited these poems while playing the lyre, a stringed harp-like instrument that required long fingernails. Because long fingernails were counterproductive to Sappho's personal life, she invented the plectrum and cut her nails short. Lesbian ingenuity at its finest. At first, everybody was like, "Wow, this poetry is so fresh and exciting." But then the patriarchy remembered that this kind of love could be damaging. So they exiled her. And they say women overreact. The people of Lesbos were like, "Hey, where is Sappho gone?" The patriarchy was like, "Oh, she left for political reasons." The people of Lesbos, "Really? What political reasons?" The patriarchy, Oh, no, sorry, we meant to say that she fell in love with a boatman and left town. The people of Lesbos. That doesn't sound like Sappho, especially considering she's been shagging half the women on the island. The patriarchy. Yeah, crazy, isn't it? I guess it just goes to show that she was waiting for the right man to come along. The people of Lesbos. Okay, can we at least have her address so we can let her know how well her poetry is doing? The patriarchy. No, she just jumped off the Leucadian cliffs and she's dead now. Sorry. To make matters worse, it had been suggested that years later, early Christian church authorities arranged for all Sappho's work to be destroyed. Thankfully, some was salvaged, though to this day, it is regarded as one of the greatest losses to the literary canon. Ancient Greeks loved writing and telling stories, and while many of these stories were mythological, they also contained some truth. Therefore, it is easy to understand why so many historians had trouble figuring out what was real and what was absolute nonsense. One example of this can be found in the story of the Amazons. In Greek mythology, the Amazons were the daughters of Ares, the god of war. The story goes that the Amazons navigated a female-only society. To continue their bloodline, they would visit a nearby tribe, use the men to breed, then make a quick exit in the morning. So who did the Amazons bone for pleasure? Each other, of course. No one knew why they were called the Amazons, but one ancient Greek theory was linked to the word amazos, without a breast. The idea was one breast was cut or burnt off. I didn't know they melted, but again, science, allowing for safer, more skillful archery. If only they'd known a woman can release an arrow from a bow without chopping her tit off. What a senseless waste of boob. So yes, the Amazons did exist, and they did so with two boobs. And yes, maybe it is a little difficult for historians to fully comprehend what the hell went on in the past, especially when you've got the ancient Greeks inventing their reality in real time. But when there is actual testimony that points to one woman's erotic attraction for another woman, as in the case of Sappho, it can be frustrating when this is continuously discredited, straightwashed, and ignored. And when I say frustrating, I mean really fucking annoying. Speaking of which, many historians also like to say that Sappho couldn't have been a lesbian because lesbianism as a concept did not exist during her time. But then, neither did straightness, so we're back where we started. Sappho can be whatever you want her to be. Sure, she didn't have the vocabulary to identify as lesbian, bisexual, or even queer, but the life she led predates modern terminology, and it's circular reasoning at best to discount her orientation and experiences. It's confusing to try to superimpose gender theory, as it's taught today, on a society that didn't operate as such. Also, I can't be arsed. Some historians, however, are well and truly arsed. In fact, conservative historians are so bothered that they continue to create heterosexual versions of Sappho in the hope that they can distance her from all things lesbian. Their interpretations have had what I imagine are unintended effects. Namely, Sappho got even hotter. Who was Sappho? 1. Sappho was the most heterosexual person on the planet. Conservative historians. We love a challenge. Queer women. 2. Sappho was a loving wife to her husband and a loving mother to her children. Conservative historians. Again, we love a challenge. Queer women. 3. Sappho was the leader of an erotic women's group. Conservative historians. Sign us up. Queer women. 4. Sappho was the headmistress of a girls' school. Conservative historians. Powerful woman and the owner of her own business? Sexy. Queer women. 5. Sappho's most erotic poem about boning women was actually about having a nap. Conservative historians. Naps are just as important as queer visibility. Queer women. 6. Sappho was a whore. Patriarchal historians. So maybe we would have stood a chance. Queer women. Sappho's appearance is also hotly debated. No reliable sources exist, but because men have been rating women's looks for centuries, we do have some, admittedly not very helpful information. One guy described her as beautiful and small. Another guy said she was ugly and small. And a different guy said that she had a lovely smile. He was that guy, going around Lesbos telling women they should smile more. One thing we do know for sure is that Sappho's name spawned sapphist, a term initially used to describe women who fancied other women. We also know that the word lesbian came from Sappho's place of birth, the Isle of Lesbos, thus making Sappho the OG lesbian of Lesbos. Although at one point, lesbian also referred to a type of wine. Ah, grape minds think alike. Forgive me, for I have sinned. When the Roman Empire came along, the patriarchy was in full swing, much like the meat between their legs. The Romans were all about breeding, but no matter how hard two women rubbed, they just couldn't make a baby. So a lack of reproduction was added to the already colossal list of why women loving women was bad. Roman men were still allowed to poke each other. They loved it so much that they created lots of different identities to categorize givers and receivers. The Romans didn't need terms for women's sexual preferences, because what women prefer was irrelevant to the political agenda then as now. In 79 CE, in Pompeii, two girls, let's call them Antonia and Fabia, were knee-deep in cunnilingus. Suddenly, an earthquake struck. But Antonia thought that the resulting trembles were the magnificent skills of Fabia, rather than the quakes that had frequently struck the area. The tremor was relatively small, so they went back to having sex before falling asleep in each other's arms. A few days later, while looking up at the mighty volcano Vesuvius, Antonia decided to show her love for Fabia by scribbling a piece of graffito upon the wall. The next day, the volcano erupted. And Antonia and Fabia were dead, as were all the inhabitants of the surrounding area. The city of Pompeii was discovered centuries later, under layers of ash, along with the words, "I wish I could hold to my neck and embrace the little arms and bear kisses on the tender lips. Go on, doll, and trust your joys to the winds. Believe me, light is the nature of men." Only a woman in love with another woman could ever write such smaltz. A few decades later, a young Roman poet named Catullus was hanging out in his local library. Catullus loved history, especially the ancient Greeks, so he picked up a book about it and began to read. As he skimmed through the pages, something caught his eye, an old and fragmented poem that looked like it had been taken from somewhere else and placed inside the pages of the book. Because he was a kleptomaniac, he stuffed the poem into his tunic and took it home to his girlfriend, Clodia. "Where did you find this?" Clodia said, shocked.
"It was in the library. Why? What does it say?" Catullus responded.
The poem was in Aeolic Greek, also known as lesbian dialect, which Clodia just happened to understand.
She looked at Catullus, speechless. Then took the poem into the bathroom, where she remained for a very long time. From then on, whenever they got down and dirty beneath the sheets, Clodia would perform the poem out loud, much to the annoyance of Catullus, who still had no idea what she was saying. After another loud and thunderous recital, Catullus snatched the poem out of Clodia's hand and took it to his friend Marcus, who also just happened to read Aeolic Greek.
"Sappho," Marcus said, dropping the poem to the floor.
"What is Sappho?" Catullus said, confused.
"They say there are women like that in Lesbos, masculine looking, but they don't want to give it up for men. Instead, they consort with women," Marcus whispered.
"There can't be. I won't believe it," Catullus said.
"It's true," Marcus replied. "I've seen it with my own eyes."
Roman men like Catullus and Marcus could not understand why, or even how, two women had sex without a penis. To try to make sense of it all, the Romans finally attempted to explain what these women did in the bedroom, such as rubbing each other aggressively, using dildos, and having dangerous, violent sex. They all sound fantastic, but the Romans settled on the Greek word tribane, meaning to rub, which then evolved into tribid, a woman who rubs her vulva against another woman for sexual pleasure, to help identify them in case they tried to take over the world or something.
So there we have it. Yay, we have a name.
Oh, and then came the Christians.
Does religion make the world a better place?
The Christians hated tribids, but they also hated men doing it with one another. They asked the Romans to stop, but the Romans weren't keen on the idea and asked the Christians to rethink their proposal. The Christians were like, "If a man also lie with mankind, as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them." The answer was no.
While the Christians didn't like any same-sex relationships, it was female same-sex relationships that really rankled.
Paul the Apostle, known to his diehard fans as St. Paul, thought that it went against nature, whatever that is, and that they should be punished in hell, wherever that is. Judaism also didn't like it. However, there was one tiny glimmer of hope for Jewish queer women, that of Ruth and her mother-in-law Naomi. And no, this is not the plot line of a cheap porno, but quite an important part of the Hebrew Bible. In the book of Ruth, Ruth tells her mother-in-law that she will follow her wherever she goes, and wherever she lodges, and that her people will be her people, and her God will be her God. Sounds a bit like a marriage vow to me. By then, both of their husbands were dead, so Ruth could have just left and found a new husband if she wanted to. But she doesn't leave. She chooses to hang out with her mother-in-law in a world where women didn't really make individual choices. Tremendous! It was clear that most religions had no room for same-sex desire. For instance, in the Quran, same-sex desire is mentioned at least 5 times, but, spoiler alert, not in a good way. Interestingly, Arabic terms for women loving other women, sak, sihak, and sihaka, stemmed from the verb to grind or to pound. You know, like pesto, guacamole, or vagina. It was clear that according to most religions, same-sex desire was still more about actions than identities. One Andalusian woman who enjoyed pounding the pesto was the princess of Cordoba, Balada bint al-Mustakfi, 994/1011 to 1091. Balada wore see-through fabrics and set up her own female literary salon. She was also open about her love affairs and wasn't afraid to let the people of Cordoba know that she was banging both men and women. The inhabitants of Cordoba were ruffled. To ruffle them even more, Balada wrote about her sexual escapades and stitched them into her tunic, in gold, so everyone in town could read all about them. Islamic philosophers and physicians also had a lot to say. One guy, Al-Kindi, said that women were lesbians because they had itchy vaginas. Another guy, Yabana Ibi Masawai, agreed, helpfully adding that if a pregnant woman eats celery, her daughter will end up fancying women. Hence the all lesbians are vegans trope. In the Vinaya, a rulebook for Buddhists, there are many references to nuns shagging one another, as well as monks. However, Buddhism also has the word pandaka, a term that has a wide range of meanings, and when I say wide, I mean basically everything that is not able-bodied straight man. This can be anything from gays, bisexuals, impotent men, intersex people, voyeurs, and, of course, people who are sexually aroused and parallel with the stages of the moon. We can't forget them, can we? The Aztecs also used the word hermaphrodite, patlache, to describe female same-sex relations, which then eventually evolved into what would now be referred to as a lesbian. Patlache was also used to describe women who carried out masculine activities, like chopping wood, building fires, and boning women. Meanwhile, Hindu gods often flirted with gender fluidity. There are also many references to woman-on-woman sex that have appeared in Hindu literature, art, and even religious scripts. How refreshing! However, some Sanskrit texts claim that women who love other women are actually conceived when men and women have sex in the cowgirl position. Again, If a woman has any agency, unnatural things will happen.
When the Roman Empire eventually tumbled around 476 CE, Christianity was rampant. Even though it was mostly men who had issues with female same-sex desire, several women were disgusted by it too, and continued being disgusted by it for hundreds and hundreds of years. One of these women was the German writer Saint! Hildegard of Bingen, 1098 to 1179. Hildegard suffered from excruciating migraines, often served with a side of hallucinations. As these were obviously messages from God, Hildegard made sure to draw them all in a book she called Civius. Many of Hildegard's illustrations resembled giant vulvas, even though she was absolutely adamant that they weren't. Know the ways of the Lord indeed. Hildegard was also in love with her female friend, Richardus von Staed. Richardus had been helping Hildegard with her book, among other things, and remained a very close confidant through her life. Nevertheless, despite routinely drawing vaginas and being obviously very much in love with a woman, Hildegard hated anything to do with tribbets, especially when they wore men's clothes. Hildegard was all like, "A woman who takes up devilish ways and plays a male role in coupling with another woman is most vile in my sight." Blah, 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 Hildegard. Go back to drawing massive vulvas, will you? Thankfully, not all women were repressed lesbians, because a century or so later, around 1350, a noblewoman, let's call her Maud de Claude, somehow managed to create her very own midwife masturbation association. It all started when Maud complained to her doctor about her painful pelvis. The doctor declared that her womb had been suffocated due to zero penis action, which had resulted in a buildup of seed. Maud hadn't been near her husband's dick in years, so the doctor asked if he could poke his penis inside her to release the seed. Maud asked if the midwife could do it instead. The doctor agreed, and the midwife gave Maud an orgasm after placing several hot items on, around, and inside her vagina. Genius. Maud told all her friends, who immediately complained to their doctors about a mysterious buildup of seed in their wombs, and that it really should be released by a midwife. It didn't take long for the Christians to figure out what was going on, and as soon as they did, they outlawed the midwife practice and warned women that masturbation, by themselves or by anybody else, would result in a trip to the flaming pits of hell, or something along those lines. You lose track after a while. If you can't beat 'em, punish 'em by beating 'em. Unfortunately for the Christians, hell wasn't scary enough anymore, so they had to come up with a list of other potential punishments. In France, when a man got caught bumming, he lost his testicles. If he did it again, he lost his penis. If he did it a third time, he was burned to death. Because the French didn't really understand female bodies, they cheerfully applied the same rules to women. In the first half of the 13th century, French woman, Beatrice de Romans, was in love with her neighbor, Maria. Beatrice was very open about her feelings for Maria and wrote extremely romantic poetry to make it even clearer. Luckily for Beatrice, her testicles and penis remained intact in that they never existed. Also in France, a woman named Lawrence was imprisoned for banging her neighbor, Joanne. Lawrence, fearing testicle removal, told everyone that she was happily married and that Joanne had been chasing her since, like, forever. Joanne was shocked and hit back, claiming that Lawrence was just another bored straight girl looking for excitement. Lawrence was eventually freed and went back to her husband. But you know what they say, once you go tribid... This kind of tomfoolery wasn't limited to France, because as time went on, more and more ludicrous ventures got going, such as witch hunting, which became popular all over Europe. Yes, women were now being accused of sorcery, heresy, and, of course, causing male impotence. I mean, what else would cause that? By the late 1400s, catching witches was so popular that a Catholic handbook named the Malleus Maleficarum, The Hammer of Witches, was published. The aim of the book?
to help people detect witchcraft and female sexuality. The book also...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?